I mean, really, there's no country in the world that's got inflation anywhere near these levels. You don't see that anywhere else in the world right now.
Hello and welcome back to Bloomberg Benchmark, a show about the global economy. And a very happy new year to all of our listeners and fans. I'm Scott Landman, an economics editor with Bloomberg News in Washington. Today I'm flying solo as your host because Dan and Kate were unable to be with us, but I'm very glad to have my colleague David Papadopoulos, a managing editor at Bloomberg in New York, joining me today for the show. Hey David, how's it going?
Excellent, Scott.
Economics, in one sense of the word, is what we call the tracking of the blizzard of indexes that we get on a regular basis all over the world to track the relative strength of different economies. Covers everything from GDP to the labor market to international trade and also whether prices are rising or falling. And it's that last measure that we are here to discuss today. The country is Venezuela, and the index is something we created all by ourselves. It's called the Café con Leche Index.
Yeah, Scott. So unlike most inflation indexes, this one isn't exactly scientific. It tracks just one product, a single cup of coffee served piping hot at a bakery in eastern Caracas, the capital of Venezuela. Yet the index plugs a gap. Inflation is rising so fast in Venezuela, and the government is so embarrassed by the pace of price increases that it stopped publishing the data a long time ago. And the drum roll, please. Excellent drum roll, Scott. As of this week, our Café con Leche Index reached 849%. That Ouch. Is the annualized inflation rate we have from the index. Now, we don't have a full year's worth of data yet on the price of coffee in our index. But since we began collecting the figures back in August, we've seen massive back-to-back-to-back price increases in just a span of several weeks in some occasions.
And that's compared with what, like 2%, just under 2% really right now in the U.S., and you had inflation peaking at 15% in 1980.
Yeah, and beyond the U.S., Scott, I mean, really, there's no country in the world that's got inflation anywhere near these levels right now. Hyperinflation, of course, there have been plenty of episodes in the past where hyperinflation was kind of in vogue, I mean, in the bad sense of the word. You know, that you had hyperinflationary bouts in other places. You don't see that anywhere else in the world right now.
Steve Hanke of Johns Hopkins University has kept track of this, and nothing remotely compares with Hungary in 1945 to 46, which, get this, it hit a monthly rate of 42 quadrillion percent, which means prices doubling every 15 hours. Do we ever use quadrillion?
No, I don't even know what mathematically that would look like, that number.
It was 10 to the 16th power.
Wow.
You know, got Germany's Weimar Republic in the 1920s hit a mere 29,500%, which is, you know, it's nothing, even though that's held out as the main example. In recent years, Zimbabwe has often made headlines with its hyperinflation. About 10 years ago, that was at 80 billion percent.
Now we're going to get an on-the-ground perspective of this issue. Joining us on the phone is Fabiola Serpa, a correspondent in our Caracas bureau who has helped get these regular updates for the Café con Leche Index. Fabiola, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me here.
So what does a Café con Leche cost right now in Venezuela?
Venezuela has two sets of prices. One is due to the official exchange rate, and the other, the unofficial exchange rate. So the prices vary a lot. So by the official exchange rate, you can buy a cup of café con leche, a café au lait, or a cup of coffee for $1.63. That's the official exchange rate, that it's around 670 bolivars per dollar. But if you compare it to unofficial rate, it's about 35 cents the cup of coffee. So because the unofficial rate is around 3,200 bolivares per dollar, so that gives you the whole view of the difference of prices of café con leche here.
So when it comes to the actual hit to somebody's pocket, what does it feel like for people in Venezuela? Is it the 32 cents or is it the $1.60?
Well, people in Venezuela here have stopped consuming café con leche because it's very the prices go up every 2 months, as the index shows. So a cup of coffee is really a luxury here.
Is there any way, David, to kind of put in perspective what this means in someone's wallet in Venezuela with the scarcity? Like, just a regular cup of coffee at Starbucks here costs $2. You can spend a few dollars if you want something more complicated, like a latte and other drinks. What are we talking about
here? So in our index, we have, and this is actually a price that Fabiola gets from a bakery in eastern Caracas, we have it at roughly 1,100 bolivars. And for a little bit of perspective on that, 1,100 bolivars, I believe, is a very significant, actually, chunk of what the essentially the minimum wage would be in Venezuela. Fabiola, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the minimum wage, when you include food subsidies and everything that people get, is something like, what, 130,000 bolivars a month? Is that right? What's the exact?
Yes, that's correct. That's the latest figure.
Okay, so when you're, and there are many folks who would be around that minimum wage number, you're making 130,000 bolivars a month, and one cup of coffee is 1,100 bolivars. It's a significant amount of money. So, Scott, in other words,
it's like 1% of your monthly expenses.
So if
you do in one day.
Exactly. And if you or I were to show up in Venezuela and you know, most people, frankly, buy and sell dollars in the black market, it would be pennies for us. It would be insignificant. But if you are a Venezuelan earning in bolivars, the local currency, it's suddenly become prohibitively expensive.
So has business gotten a lot slower, Fabiola, at places that, you know, that sell café con leche, those kind of cafes?
Café con leche was usually what you got in the morning. You stopped at the local bakery and got a cup of coffee and something to eat very fast. But nowadays, the bakeries, you know, they're not selling very much café con leche. It's become a luxury to the Venezuelans.
Have any of those places had to close?
No, not to close, because they sell all the things. But, you know, the really complex thing about the café con leche is that it's a product made of three staples that are very scarce here in Venezuela with the current crisis. It's sugar, milk, and coffee. And those are the three staples that Venezuela has to import these days. For instance, back in 10 years ago, we were self-sufficient in milk and coffee and sugar. But nowadays, we have to import roughly 75% of the coffee we consume. That's a very big, dramatic change for the café con leche here as a staple, as David said at the beginning.
My thought was that, you know, I remember when I lived in Venezuela in the 1990s, actually right up to the time Hugo Chavez took office in 1999, that you'd walk into any one of these bakeries and the café con leche was just something that they just moved massive quantities of. It was almost kind of like a loss leader, right? It was what you did, you sold to help get people in the door. And then they were in the door, they bought a café con leche and they bought a loaf of Venezuelan bread. And then they'd see something else and something else and something else. And, it was just something that just sort of helped churn. You would turn massive volumes in, and you really get the sense that is slowed quite a bit.
So are we going to have to change this index pretty soon if nobody's buying café con leche?
Well, you know, Fabiola and I will certainly think about it. I think the issue you have is that I don't know that people are consuming much of anything. So we would start to have to think hard about what we would latch on to if it weren't café con leche.
Well, maybe Fabiola can talk about, you know, what about other basic goods in Venezuela? I mean, how are people, can we measure inflation by their prices, or how are people paying for them? Are they fixed prices? And how does that work?
As I said before, it's like a two-dimensional economy, because you have fixed prices. The government has set prices for staples like sugar, coffee, milk, meat. But you can also find those staples at an official rate. So you have like two economies. And yes, these staples, sugar, coffee, and milk, so they have hit the ceiling. I mean, and they're very, very scarce. And you have to queue a lot to get coffee, these staples, on the fixed price if you want. If you can't afford to queue for 5 hours, for 3 hours, or you just can't find them in your neighborhood, or you have to buy them at an official rate. So, yes, you can measure inflation by these staples like flour, corn flour. They are going up every month if you measure it by the official rate. But the fixed prices of the government, and they have been adjusting these staples every 3 to 4 months in the last year. It's two prices you see on every product.
Now, one puzzle for a lot of us outside Venezuela on the outside looking in is, you know, things have been in such bad shape now for some time. But we wonder why Mr. Maduro continues to remain in power. You know, what point does the pressure become so overwhelming that there is some kind of political regime change in Venezuela?
Right. Well, Scott, that's kind of the million-dollar question, and that's something that folks have been asking for an awful long time. I mean, I was recalling the other day that, you know, his predecessor, Hugo Chavez, the man who essentially hand-picked Mr. Maduro to run the country and succeed him, there was the scuttlebutt in Caracas back in the late 90s when Chavez was taking office that his administration was going to collapse imminently at any point in time, and that he was going to be impeached immediately. And here we are 20 years later, and the regime, as it's to be understood, with Mr. Maduro succeeding him, is still there. I think it is a head scratcher even for a lot of Venezuelans, because when you look at just how bad things are, how dysfunctional that place has become, it's hard to understand how they're holding on. I will say this, that there has been a big push to recall the president. The opposition certainly has gathered enough signatures to make that happen, but the government has put up one obstacle after another to block it, and you're in this sort of holding pattern that we've seen, frankly, for a pretty long time.
And is the country still able to sell oil, or has that stopped too?
It does. It does. Oil production is down. Exports are down, but it still does export. I believe it's producing. I mean, again, there are no official figures really, but estimates would put it in the ballpark of 2.5 million, I believe, barrels a day. You know, before Mr. Chavez took office in the late 90s, the vision of the previous administration was to ramp up output to somewhere around 5 million barrels or so plus. This is a country with the world's largest oil reserves, and yet all we've seen, unfortunately, over the past two decades, certainly unfortunate for the Venezuelan people who are now becoming deeply impoverished, is declining output.
So, Fabiola, you know, if you had to sum up the mood of people that you talk to on a regular basis, or people around Caracas, around Venezuela, looking at how much the economy has sunk, how much inflation is growing, what would you say?
Well, if you asked me that question about 6 months ago, people were very angry. I mean, up until December, very angry at the situation, very frustrated, but more and more openly talking against the government at every corner, at every street. In contrast to a year or 2 years ago, where people did not connect the bad shape of the economy to the running of the politics. But nowadays, after, well, the major blow at December that there was not going to be a referendum, the mood in the streets is very depressed. People are very sad. The mood is pretty low. in contrast to 3 months ago, where many Venezuelans thought the referendum recall was going to happen some way, and there were demonstrations in the streets. But slowly, the government curtailed that possibility. The high court ruled against it. So the mood is very sad. I mean, that's how I perceive it today.
Well, doesn't sound like a good situation by any means, but Fabiola, we will definitely look forward to your reporting in the coming months on the situation there. Thanks so much for joining us, Fabiola.
Perfect.
Thank you, and thank you, David, for joining us too.
My pleasure.
Benchmark will be back next week, and until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal and Bloomberg.com, as well as on iTunes, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and the revamped Bloomberg app. While you're there, take a minute to rate and review the show so more listeners can find us. Let us know what you thought of the show. You can follow me on Twitter at Scott Landman. Our guest, Fabiola, is at ZERPIUS. And just one final note, Benchmark is produced by Sarah Patterson. The head of Bloomberg Podcasts is Alec McCabe. Thanks for listening. See you next time.